This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Welcome to By the Book. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, together with my, let's see, what's this week's description of my co-host, Lynn, my fellow book lover.
There we go. That, I like that. Yes, it is I.
And we do have joining us one of our favorite guests in the last couple of months.
That's my description.
That is. And also, as we've mentioned before, voice of God, let's not forget.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Arvind Yuvaraj from the Enterprise team.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us again.
We should say right off the top, the reason why we invited Arvind back on the show, aside from, you know, sheer favoritism, is also that the last time you were on, you kind of proved to be sort of the blankest slate of all blank slates. Mm-hmm. You were like willing to accept everything.
And
you know,
I mean that as a compliment.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. You know, whatever cover, whatever, you know, story synopsis, it's like, nah. I shall read the story. Mm-hmm. And that we thought was a good quality for today's show.
Yes, because we wanted to talk about, I suppose the best way to describe it is how we start gendering books or how we learn which are boy books and girl books, I suppose.
Ooh, yeah. So like keeping it light on today's show.
No, absolutely. You know, feminism, gendering, identity, things like that.
Yeah, regular stuff. But also, like you said, boiling it down, girl books, boy books, go. Mm-hmm. Because I guess... Did you read a lot as a kid, Arvind?
Yes. Mm. I did. I can't remember a lot of what I read, though. I knew there was a lot of, like, Hardy Boys. There was a lot of Famous Five. There was a lot of Nancy Drew. There was a lot of...
See, right there. Right there is why we had you for this show. Because almost every boy I know growing up... So I read both Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, and I love them equally. And then there were the crossovers where I was like, oh my God, they're all in the same book. Okay, anyway.
No, it's my first introduction to, like, a shared universe.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they would cross over with each other.
Yeah.
I think some of them were cousins, like the Famous Five. Even the Hardy Boys were cousins or like...
Famous Five? I think that might be a universe that didn't exist.
Didn't exist?
Not them, but
no,
Nancy...
No, the Secret Seven and the Famous Five were cousins or something. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't know many guys growing up or even today who read Nancy Drew because it was so clearly perceived as a girl book.
Nancy Drew, an attractive girl of 18, was driving home along a country road in her new dark blue convertible. She had just delivered some legal papers for her father. It was sweet of Dad to give me this car for my birthday, she thought, and it's fun to help him in his work. Her father, Carson Drew, a well-known lawyer in their hometown of River Heights, frequently discussed puzzling aspects of cases with his blonde, blue-eyed daughter.
And that is sort of the early thing, right? Because from a very young age, once you get out of the fairy tales, once you move on from all your Oscar Wildes and Hans Christian Andersens and, you know, just from those Brothers Grimm, from that, which are really designated as for kids, although we could also make an argument that that's not the case. Once you get out of that, I think you really start to, once you become a tween, start to wander into this weird thicket of books where some of the covers have girls on the front.
Yes.
Take your Nancy Drews. Mm-hmm. And then others have boys. Your boys. Mm-hmm. And so from a very young age, unless you are an especially voracious reader who just read anything, you know, you start to recognize like, oh, I see, this person looks like me, therefore this book is for me. Okay, fine. And I think that's just, it starts very young.
Mm. But am I correct in, or is this just me, or am I correct in assuming that girls don't do that as much as boys? And I don't know whether that's a parent thing as well. I never felt like I didn't want to read Hardy Boys because there were boys on the cover. Similarly, I used to read many books, even, you know, growing up as an adult, when I read young adult books, and Artemis Fowl is as exciting to me, or Percy Jackson is as exciting to me as something that would be more specifically written for women, for girls, like, say, Hunger Games. But I feel like boys are often boxed in much sooner.
See, I never felt that way. I thought boys were the ones who had access to all the books, or they didn't have to sort of skew their view of a world or of a story according to the protagonist. Because I think for every 10 books that I read, maybe there was one that had a female protagonist. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, it doesn't take a lot of... I mean, I wasn't actively like going like, oh, okay, I have to look at this story through the lens of Nancy Drew or whatever. But it's a mystery, and it excited me, and it was interesting, and I just read it through, you know, whatever protagonist was there. But I always thought that women had to do that more because of the pick of the books that you had. Maybe it would be through the lens of a male protagonist, and then you would get like one or two that had like a female lead. Back then, at least. Because now I think there's a lot more. I think after the Percy Jacksons and the Artemis Fowls and stuff, a lot of authors have come out with their own young adult novels, which have done like really well, like Hunger Games. Then you have, what's the one with The Insurgent and Divergent series. Yeah, that. And then there's the other one with the one is supposed to launch. I can't get the name. It was supposed to launch, then it didn't, because I think the studio had a problem with Insurgent, so they didn't launch that franchise. But it was another line of books that had a female protagonist, and it was like young adult. So I think now there's a lot more. But back then, I can't think of any sort of book lines or book series that had female protagonists in that genre.
And you know, the thing I think we do need to make clear about our conversation is that nobody, or at least I am not going to make the argument that there is anything wrong with inherently having girl stories and boy stories.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, because I was just thinking while we were talking about this, about some of the books that I read that were really important to me as a very dramatic, utterly misunderstood child, you know, just that kind of like overly precocious, nonsensical being that I was. And there were some books that really spoke to me, I felt, like Harriet the Spy.
Harriet pushed her hair back and looked at him seriously. Sport, what are you going to be when you grow up? You know what? You know I'm going to be a ball player. Well, I'm going to be a writer. And when I say that's a mountain, that's a mountain.
Mm-hmm. Where I was like, yes, I am that annoying. And why don't my friends like me? And, you know, and there were very particular sort of niceties that sometimes as girls, you're expected to be more polite. You're expected to behave in certain ways. And so whenever I read books with, you know, kind of unruly female protagonists who were just not quite fitting into a societal box, because partly of the fact that they were girls, I really appreciated that. So I don't think we're here necessarily to dismantle it and, you know, just not have...
And say books should be genderless in some way.
Yeah, because there is some value to telling the stories of sometimes of the particular experience of being a girl growing up, experience of being a boy growing up. The problem, I think, is when people aren't Arvin and therefore don't do that weird crossover thing of just, no, I'm just here for a good story. You know, some people are going to be attracted to certain things and maybe never have those horizons expanded.
So what came to mind when you were talking earlier, Arvin, and it's exactly what you're saying, that the problem is not so much that there shouldn't be stories. The problem was, I used to feel like, where are the cool stories with women, right? Like, you have your Harriet the Spy occasionally. And, you know, I loved the Anne of Green Gables Little Women, again, because of the girl growing up experience.
You've never mentioned that before. This is the first time.
I know. It's a secret. I never talk about Anne of Green Gables. But where were the cool stories? And it's a similar experience that panned out in movies as well. And that's why I think what you said earlier was interesting, Arvin, because women have to do that so often that it's a lot easier, I think, for us to look at a book that has a male lead because you're kind of used to doing it. You're kind of used to anyway finding things that you identify with in a particular character, even if they're completely different from you, because you want so much to have cool stories that you can identify with.
Yeah. So where would you look for those cool stories? Like, it would be, looking back, I think it would have been boxed into maybe like fiction for women. And normally when you have that bracket, it's the lesser sort of like not properly written books that are either overly romantic or have like fiction that doesn't have quality in it. But whereas there is male fiction as well, but there's no such bracket. There's no male fiction sort of box.
So fiction for girls in particular is always minimized as being fluffy or silly or not worthy of being considered. And we still see that being done today with a lot of young adult novels, the tone that people take when they talk about books that are for younger girls.
It's not even young adult, right? I mean, we're talking also about just the term chick lit.
Yes.
The idea of the term of it. And that's as if somebody's struggles to, I don't know, find a date in New York City and maintain a career and, you know, and all that stuff.
The Sex in the City stuff.
Yes.
Sure. And that doesn't necessarily mean, again, that it's an invalid story, just that where is the diversity and variety of, you know, different sorts of characters that you do tend to miss. I think there were so many things. So when we were talking about this, and I think Sharmila, you and I have had this chat off mic before, I never realized until I was a little bit older how almost all my favorite writers were men.
Absolutely.
And I never noticed until a little bit older when I started this habit of listing the books that I read. Every time I finish one, I just add it to a list. And then I can look back and kind of see, oh, okay, so this is the amount I've read. And when you do that, A, you realize how much of those books you forget. But the other thing is also, gosh, when I was younger, I realized I read almost no women. And I don't know whether that was a function of you know, the representation of female writers in bookshops outside of the chick lit or self-help aisles. I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it was my personal bias. It's a number of things. I think a lot of people, especially people who read classic books, are going to fall into that trap.
So I there was a very clear divide. I did read a lot of books by women, but they were books that no one took seriously. They were books like Sweet Valley High. And then there's Enid Blyton, which, not that she's not worth being taken seriously, but she's considered a children's writer. Whereas the quote-unquote serious literature that I read were all largely by men, even if you look at the classics. If you think of Charles Dickens or John Steinbeck or Hemingway, I mean, they're all white men.
He was an old man who fished alone in his skiff in the Gulf Stream, and he'd gone 84 days now without taking a fish. In the first 40 days, a boy had been with him. But after 40 days without a fish, the boy's parents had told him that the old man was now definitely and finally salao, which is the worst form of unlucky.
And even when it progressed onto being more Asian, right? If you take like an R.K. Narayan from India, again, men. The books that were written by women were often, with the rare exception, most of them were considered lesser reads.
Yeah, but you don't get the same thing for like John Grisham.
You don't.
You don't.
Exactly.
Whereas he does the same thing. It's the same sort of, it's the same quote-unquote fluff writing. Like even the stuff that he comes out with is not like high quality stuff. And John Grisham is a super mainstream like author, but he's seen as, oh, every book he puts out is something that you have to read. He's like, how would you, if this was TV, he would be like Shonda Rhimes.
Okay, here it is. Your choice, it's simple. Her or me. And I'm sure she's really great. But Derek, I love you. In a really, really big, pretend to like your taste in music. Let you eat the last piece of cheesecake. Hold a radio over my head outside your window. Unfortunate way that makes me hate you. Love you. So pick me. Choose me. Love me.
You know what I mean? He is that. He caters to like the biggest demographic and the easiest demographic that he can get.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't get boxed in. John Grisham is just John Grisham.
Yeah. Well, we do need to take a break, but we will be back after this to continue talking about how we think of gender when it comes to reading and whether we make our choices based on gender when we read. You are listening to By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. You are listening to Buy the Book with me, Sharmila, and Lynn, with our special guest for today, Arvind Yuvraj.
So we've been talking about girl books and boy books, I think is the simplest way to put it. Whether or not such things exist, whether or not we pick our readings based in part on whether we are, you know, male or female or whatever else. And we do want to hear from you about your experiences when you were growing up. And even now when you make your choices about what you read, are you conscious of, you know, buying a book with a bright pink cover, for instance, if you are not a woman? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. You can, of course, if you'd like to write a lengthier letter, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
So what are some of those books that you guys did read when you were growing up that you would think were specifically targeted to your gender? I mean, we did discuss earlier about things like Anne of Green Gables or Harriet the Spy.
Mm.
But did you ever feel like, oh, this is a book that only a girl would want to read or only a boy would want to read?
No. I think my first book, now that I think of it, and it, I only thought of this after you told me that we were going to do this last week.
Mm-hmm.
The first book that I ever had, I think I was maybe 3 or 4, it was like this thick 365 fairy tales for 365 days. And my dad would read this to me like one story a night and stuff. And it had like I think it had a pink cover or a red cover, and it had like a fairy godmother. I don't know if it was like Cinderella's godmother, some other godmother. And it had a girl in a bed, and it had like a flying dog. So now that I now
what
that
is a lot story? Going on,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it was like it was a complex cover. Yeah. But now that I think of it, I don't think that book was specifically for boys or like young boys. I think if it was a boy's book, it would have had like a kid on a wooden horse,
airplanes,
yeah, or cars or cowboys or whatever. So I think that was a girl's book, was targeted for girls, but that was my first book. Mm. And I think all the fairy tales in it was sort of skewed towards being for young girls. After that, it was the mystery stuff. It was the Hardy Boys and the Secret Sevens and the R.L. Steins.
R.L. Steins.
R.L. Steins, yeah, Stein, yeah. Yes. Lots of R.L. Stein. Yeah.
Chapter 1. My name is Lisa Brooks, and I'm a twisted psycho. I wasn't always a total nutcase. Before the accident, I thought I was doing pretty okay.
Yeah, then I just went on to like young adult without knowing it was young adult, and then I just carried on with whatever came my way. Mm.
So I'm going to answer your question, but just while Arvin was speaking, I was thinking about the fact that how do we feel about these rewrites of fairy tales? I know there are a few ways of doing it now. People sometimes rewrite fairy tales just to subvert. Sometimes people write fairy tales for adults. But there's also this whole movement, right, of rewriting fairy tales for girls or of centering current female heroes. I'm thinking of people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and how they are making it into children's books because people in America, for example, want their kids to be able to see real women, you know, triumphing. How do we feel about that sort of the idea that now books for girls might mean something different to what we were thinking of when we were speaking of it earlier?
So I have two quite distinct opinions. I love that idea of making heroes of women and highlighting the achievements of women and writing those stories. What I'm not as much of a fan of, while it can be done well, is when fairy tales, classic fairy tales, are rewritten so drastically and to have that empowerment angle. For me, sometimes I kind of like the problematic early version, mainly because the originals, you know, if they were from Brothers Grimm or, you know, Anderson, were hugely problematic in many ways. And they were all sort of cautionary tales, which were dark and quite horrific.
Twisted.
Honestly, when was the last time people read Little Red Riding Hood? Because my God.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so I mean, while I understand why they want to sanitize and change them for children, that is not something I'm a fan of.
Yeah, I actually prefer fresh tellings.
Yes.
Newer stories. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, standing with a placard saying, leave the fairy tales alone. But they are folk tales. In the case of, for example, the Brothers Grimm, they were stories that were collected, you know, painstakingly oral histories from like communities. These are community stories. And I think there are ways to, in a way, it extends the work, right, of telling your child this story, because you tell the child the story and then maybe you explain, yeah, so this is not the best example of how to behave in that, you know, so I agree.
But also the stories that we tell, are they the modified stories? Are they the actual stories? Because a lot of the ones that we tell are the Disneyfied version. So Disneyfication sort of changed all of that.
Everybody Lives.
Yeah, Everybody Lives. You know, Peter Pan, Hunchback of Notre Dame, all that stuff is not the actual story.
Over there, Tink. And it's Dan. Is it there?
Must be here somewhere.
So where do we stand on that? You don't want to be telling kids the actual story of the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, we just spoke about this off air. But I think it helps that Disney sort of stepped in and made all these fairy tales like accessible. And I think other fairy tale books or publishers, when they have like you know, stories that are public and they don't belong to any publishing house, they sort of make it more easily digestible for young kids.
I started clutching my chest while you were talking about Peter Pan because I forgot how heartbreaking that story is.
But see, those are stories and they evolve, right? Do we need drastically changed retellings because the stories are too scary or too sad or too difficult?
I mean, that's the role of a parent, right? Or a guardian in trying to determine at what age your child meets a story. Mm. And I think that it also depends on how much of a reader you are as a parent, because neither of my parents were readers, or rather my mom was very much into her own version of gendered books, which were like Jackie Collins, you know, sort of that vein, Sydney Sheldon. So she wasn't really monitoring what I was reading. My dad has never read, very proudly, goes on about how he's never read a book in his life. So I wasn't raised necessarily by avid readers. And so I would say if I could redo, I think it would have been nice if they had, just been looking a little bit to see what age I was at when I met Pennywise. You know, I wish that they'd done that for me.
You and me both.
Yes.
I read Hunchback when I was much too young, really. But that also, then that idea of parents getting involved in what you read, right?
Yeah.
And when it relates to gender, do you find that is where that comes from? Do parents inadvertently gender your reading by picking books for you that they think are for you based on what they think is your sexual identity or gender identification?
I think it happens, like it definitely happens in a lot of cases. Personally, for me, it never happened. Mm-hmm. Books were just books. Like you could just pick up anything that seemed attractive. Or I think for them, as long as I was reading something, it's fine. A book is a book is a book. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it was like, you know, written for girls, guys, whatever. It was never an issue. So I think I just picked up anything. And it never crossed my mind that things were written for certain people until like way later on. Until someone had to like nudge me and go, you know, this book is meant for women and this book is meant for men. And then it sort of struck me like, oh.
Is that a difficult thing to have someone tell you when you're a kid and then someone goes, you know, why are you reading that girl book?
No. I mean, I was way too old to care by the time anymore. And even if someone did, I don't think it would have mattered because I was enjoying the book. It's the same thing I do with movies. Like, I don't care. Like, someone said the same thing about Beauty and the Beast.
Tale as old as time. True as it can be.
When I said I was upset that they banned it here, and then they went like, why? And then I said, because I wanted to be at the premiere. Then they're like, are you taking your girlfriend? And I'm like, no, I want to see it. And then they're like, oh, your secret is safe with me. And I'm like, what secret? I just said it. You know, I want to be there, like center seats. I want the good seats. I want to watch the movie. So, no, I don't care.
I think for me, as I just outed both my parents as, you know, not being the best book guiders, you know, there was a study that came out in, I can't remember which Nordic Scandi country it was, that showed that when girls had more exposure to STEM in schools, actually their involvement with STEM in their careers dropped off. And that's one of those studies that's often cited as like, you see, actually women don't want to do science. And I bring that up only to say that I can't explain this, but nobody guided my hand to Sweet Valley High. There was nobody there behind me who like pushed my hand up to the shelf, picked the book off. I don't know why I read it, but they were hugely important to me as a child. I reveled in their girliness. I really deeply enjoyed it. The fact that there's the Unicorn Club and their favorite color is purple and, you know, the covers with their smiling, beaming blonde faces. Yes. Like, I loved all of that as a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where that came from. I think it's probably socialization to a degree. I think it was also their proximity to Archie comics on the shelves. It was just a number of different things, because I also graduated from Sweet Valley High to R.L. Stein and Fear Street, based again on shelf proximity. So a lot of it, I think, is just based on where you were. But there are complex things. I don't know why. I can't explain it.
So what I think would be unfortunate or sad is actually when that is limited, which is why I was asking that question about what happens when someone tells you, well, that's not for you, because I was very much that Sweet Valley High kid, right? Like I loved reading these so-called girly books, but at the same time, I loved reading Three Investigators and Jupiter Jones and these three boys going out and like solving mysteries, right? Or Fatty Trotterville, you know, when I was younger with the Five Finders. And I identified with the
Five Finders.
The Five Finders are
never
awesome.
Heard of it.
Oh my God. You guys have to read it.
Find Outers.
They're like
not
the
Finder Outers.
Find Outers. They are the cool, they're like the cool version of the Famous Five.
Was this by like Edith Blyton or like a
I'm legit
author?
Not making this up.
Also, cooler than the Famous Five. Cool Your Jets. The Famous Five were plenty cool.
Yeah.
But that's
the
because
coolest,
they didn't have Fatty Trotterville, who was the lead of the gang and who could disguise himself.
I feel like you're gonna reverse engineer near these books, and they're going to be written by like S.G. Trotterville.
Can someone please WhatsApp or tweet us and verify that you've read these books at BFM Radio 018-789-8899?
Don't get people to support your made up books. Thank you very much.
My point was that I enjoyed having that diversity. I enjoyed having both. And I think it would be really sad for any child, any adult really, to feel like you could and somehow were only supposed to read a particular thing. And I think that does happen. That happens to a lot. And it's why so many men that I know, or even boys today, won't be caught dead holding a book that looks girly.
Yeah, that has a sparkly cover, for instance, of which there are many. I did want to bring the conversation back to something that kind of flew by just now, which was Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. Because I think Peter Pan is a great example of, in some ways, quite a unique story in that you could read it totally as a girl story. There's a Wendy. Mm-hmm. There's a Wendy who wants to be a mom to the boys. There is a Tink, you know. But even just the story of Wendy in and of herself and trying to grow into this role of being the eldest sister, of trying to be, you know, a pseudo mom. You could read it that way. And then, of course, there's Peter Pan, you know, who never wants to grow up, who wants to be a boy fighting pirates, who has his gang of the Lost Boys. And so that book is actually kind of, I don't know whether there are that many like it, where you can absolutely read it either just as a great yarn, but you could also view it very, very clearly through either a girl lens or a boy lens.
It's a 50-50.
It almost is, I think.
Almost is 50-50. Mm. Wow.
Does bring us to footnotes, but because we have so much to talk about on this topic, we've decided to ask Arvind to stick around and continue our conversation on the gendering of books. So speaking of books that could equally be for boys or girls, you know, it doesn't happen very often, right? Even when you take something like Harry Potter, for instance, another book that I never talk about on the show, it is very clearly a book about a boy, even though it was written by a woman.
Yeah, and has one of the great female characters, Hermione Granger, and, you know, the next great female character, Minerva McGonagall. I could go on.
But they are all supporting characters.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wonder, why did J.K. Rowling choose to write about a boy wizard and not a girl wizard?
I suppose
you could... girl witch, I suppose.
There's a harsh truth there, but it's because it's, you know, publishing. And, you know, she couldn't get published before she shortened her name, and she had to sort of sound ambiguous so people wouldn't catch on. So I think that's why she made, you know, H.P. a guy instead of a girl.
And otherwise they get shelved into the girl YA bookshelf, where else the for everyone to read is often the common shelf.
Yeah. Or the shelf up in front. And would it have become like a pop culture phenomenon if it was written the other way?
So by Joanne.
By Joanne, yeah.
You guys are harshing my buzz, I have to say. I was going to kind of come in with this really romantic notion of, you know, because she always said she saw this boy and she wanted to tell his story, which is a story that she's repeated, that, you know, when she first imagined the story, she saw Harry, you know, and she realized like, oh, there is the story that I have to tell. But, you know, you guys kind of just took my little romantic idea, jumped up and down on it a lot, and then threw it away. So I think
In the spirit of being 50-50, both could somewhat be true.
I think so.
It could be.
There is no denying that she had to shorten her name, you know, and there is no denying that when you have an ambiguous name, especially when you're a woman, I think, and this is something that we've seen employed from the days of, I don't know, George Eliot, you know, like
George Eliot, exactly.
You know, of moments where, well, you won't publish me, but fine, I'm George now, or I'm JK. And then suddenly it's like, oh, interesting book. Lightning Scar, huh?
Yeah,
that'll sell. So there is definitely that element there. I'm not denying it. Mm. Do we care whether a male or female character is written by a male or female author?
Something there's been a lot of conversation about recently, right? More so when a male author writes about a woman and whether...
And I think writes about women, I think, in specific emotional situations. That's when it tends to come up. I think anything that perpetuates the idea of, women, shrug, yeah. They be crazy, you know, that kind of thing. That tends to get a little bit of attention. Yeah. But I think it also, again, to drag it to like a Hollywood example, I'm thinking of Scarlett Johansson and her recent statement that
That she can play anything she wants.
Because that's part of the job. And so similarly, I wonder whether for writers, there is a similar thought process of, well, it's about imagination. It's about being able to tell a story. Therefore, anybody should be able to tell anybody's story. And I don't really agree with that. But I do think that that's the train of thought.
Isn't it more authentic if a male author writes for like a male protagonist and a female author writes for like a female protagonist? Or doesn't it matter? Because going back to the book that we spoke about previously with Claudia Gray and Leia, a lot of stuff in that book I would have seen as cheesy and unnecessary if it was done by a male author. Especially the stuff with Kiyo Domadi and
the
all
chest.
Chest and the thumping, beating heart or whatever. But because it came from like a female author, it sounded more, I don't say authentic, but I knew it wasn't fluff. I knew it didn't come from a place of someone just trying to stereotype Leia in this age and going through certain things that he thinks she is going through. So that was, I could easily just pass that by. But when it comes to stuff like Game of Thrones and George Martin, he gets a lot of flack for the way he writes women, but he also gets a lot of praise for the way he writes women and how they've been adapted to TV. So he seems to be able to do it well because he writes all of them as horrible people.
It's much easier to write jerks,
is,
I suppose.
It is. But you know, there are powerful female characters in the story, and then there are powerful male characters in the story, and they all exist on like a flat plane. So I don't know how much, how authentic it is or how much it matters that you have to be male or female when you write male or female characters.
So I'm going to cheat a little bit, but this is actually how I feel. I always go back to the experience of reading the book. To me, while outside of the experience of reading the book, I can understand that whole idea of who gets to represent who, and it is important, especially when some voices aren't represented at all. I also feel like the proof is really in the pudding, or the proof is in the reading in this case, because when I read the book, and if I can identify with the character, and if I can resonate with the character, whether they were written by a man or a woman often doesn't matter very much to me. And there have been many female characters written by men that I've read in the past that have really gotten to me. Even in a very mainstream sense, someone like a Stieg Larsson, I don't like the second and third millennium books, but the first book, I love the way he writes. Oh my God, what's
Lisbeth?
Her name? I love the way he writes Lisbeth Salander. And he was a man, a straight white man who was writing about a very particular kind of woman, and I think he did a really good job.
So I'm going to borrow that to a degree. I agree that the reading is super important, but I also think in some cases, have you spoken to people? Like ever? Mm. You know, did you go and speak to the kinds of characters that you're planning to write? Yeah, research. And it doesn't have to be a vomit of Wikipedia onto the page. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. But I think you can tell when somebody has bothered to actually go and try and understand what it is that they're writing about.
Yeah.
And when somebody just thought, oh, I need a femme fatale, toss one in. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I need a, you know, stereotypical macho superhero, toss one in. So there's a difference, I think, between that and someone who's actually done the work of trying to understand, okay, so there is a male character, but it's not about their maleness or it's not about their femaleness. Mm-hmm. It's about what are they, what have they gone through, and then you go and do that. And I think that's probably where we're going to end up, right? The idea that really it's about the characters and the stories. You know, we shouldn't necessarily be reading everything through the lens of gender.
Yes, and I think that is a great note to end on. Thank you very much for joining us again, Arvind.
Thank you.
What do you think about books when it comes to gender? Do you prefer to read books that relate to your own experience? Or do you sort of widen the net and
want to explore?
And explore what how you can understand gender through different kinds of writings? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.